going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Dolphins In Depth podcast. I'm Daniel Yafusi. Thanks so much for tuning in. Took the week off last week to kind of recharge the batteries after a long NFL season. Enjoy this past weekend's slate of games, as I'm sure a lot of you all did. But we're back to talk Dolphins football. It was pretty quiet on the Dolphins front as they continue their search for a new head coach. But we're going to talk a lot about that as well as some other things. But first, I want to introduce this week's guest. Joining me, I have Andre Fernandez, the Miami Herald's deputy sports editor. It's not a new name to a lot of people that have been listening to some of our other podcasts and reading our work, returning or coming to the show for the first time since I've been here. Andre, how you doing?
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks for inviting me. I'm doing good, man. I'm like just like you. I mean, it's one of those things where the football season's almost over and I'm starting to look at it like, oh, do I really? It's been so good. I don't want it to end. With the games last week, which were unbelievable, and it kind of sucks that we have to wait 5 months after the Super Bowl, but we're going to enjoy right now. We're going to enjoy these next few weeks and how much better hopefully this can get.
No, that's so true. I mean, they always say that the divisional round of the NFL playoffs is probably the best weekend we can get. And I mean, it lived up to expectations. You know, we have four games that all end on game-winning scores, whether that's a game-winning field goal or a game-winning touchdown, as we saw in the Buffalo Bills Kansas City Chiefs game. And you know, I'm telling you, the championship games and championship weekend and the Super Bowl weekend, I mean, they have a lot to live up to after this past weekend. But that's really where I want to start. Like I said, just four incredible games. We really saw the cream of the crop, you know, this past weekend. And I know a lot of Dolphins fans, as they were watching that game, in a sense, it kind of served as a template or kind of a reminder of how far they have to go to really, really be spoken about in terms of the NFL's, you know, elite teams.
Just when you think you're close, you get that cold dose of water to the face saying, hey, look, this is, you're not anywhere near as close as you think you are.
Exactly. I know Greg Cody wrote a great column just saying, you know, if you watch Mahomes and Josh Allen on Sunday, I mean, it just shows how much better the Dolphins have to be, how better Tua has to be if they even want to like sniff that type of postseason success. And that's really where I want to start, you know, what the Dolphins can learn from the divisional round. I know, again, a lot of Dolphins fans are just kind of saying, hey, like, we have to be so much better if we want to get to that point. And as I kind of watched those four games, saw all the discourse on Twitter and whatnot, I kind of made this list to me of like the three things that the Dolphins can learn from the divisional round, and they kind of lead into each other. So the first thing is that to get to that point in the playoffs or the postseason, you need to have players who can win individual battles at the premium skill positions. And when I say that, I say offensive line, particularly offensive tackle, left tackle, right tackle, edge rusher, and then wide receiver, cornerback. I know that we talk a lot about, you know, trench play and offensive line, defensive line being sound in those kind of unglamorous positions. And that's true as well. But I mean, you saw it, whether it was, starting with the Cincinnati Bengals and the Tennessee Titans, the ability of, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, that was a very low scoring game. Both teams having trouble kind of putting points on the board, but you saw how Joe Burrow could just throw a screen pass to Ja'Marr Chase. And before you know it, he goes for 60 yards because he just has that athletic ability. You saw their ability to rush the passer at times against Ryan Tannehill. If you go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Los Angeles Rams, you saw an Aaron Donald, you saw Von Miller, their ability to rush the passer and make Tom Brady uncomfortable. Yeah, and then even going to a game like the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers, you saw Nick Bosa and those pass rushers just disrupting what the Green Bay Packers do and limiting them to I believe just 10, 13 points. And then even the final game that we saw, which was really the best game. I mean, what can you say about premium skill position players? The Kansas City Chiefs, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Gabriel Davis, who a lot of people did not know about him, but he had a coming out party in front of the entire nation. I mean, you have to have those premium skill position players who can dominate. I mean, of course, all these teams are well coached. They have really good rosters, but you know, their star players at really important positions stepped up and made plays. And I guess on the offense side of the ball, that leads me into saying that you need to be an explosive offense. We saw that so much with the Dolphins this past season, where, you know, they were able to sometimes do those 70, 75 yard drives and get to the end zone, but you can't really rely on doing that 4 or 5 times a game and putting up 30 points. I mean, it's just so hard to do that. I looked up some numbers from Sharp Football Stats, explosive play rates, and those are defined as run plays that gain at least 10 yards and pass plays that gain at least 15 yards. If you look at the top 15, like the top half of that list, the San Francisco 49ers are fifth in explosive play rate. The Los Angeles Rams are eighth. The Kansas City Chiefs are ninth. The Bills are 12th. The Bengals are 14th. The Bucks are 15th. I was a little surprised to see that the Packers are 21st because they have Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams and a really good offense, but they're 21st and the Titans are 25th. Obviously they had some issues on offense, but you just have to be explosive, you know?
Yeah. I think the stat there kind of shows you the impact that Deebo Samuel had in San Francisco.
Oh, most definitely.
To drive that explosive, you know, as soon as they started using him out of the backfield, that rate must have gone up tremendously. But to your point, I think if you start with up front, the offensive lines, the teams that can protect the quarterback, but not just that, the pass rush. I think the Rams example, even Green Bay. I mean, Za'Darius Smith, I think, was out pretty much the whole year. Had Green Bay had him, you saw the impact he made in the playoff game. Even though they lost, it was a defensive struggle, kind of disrupted what the 49ers were trying to do. But yeah, I mean, Tyreek Hill's been doing that, you know, over not just in these playoffs, but all the time. But the reason he can, and Jalen Waddle is kind of taking it to the Dolphins. Jalen Waddle's kind of, we're not saying he's Tyreek Hill yet, but he's of that mold. The reason Tyreek Hill can be so dangerous too is look at all the weapons around him, all the threats you have in that passing game to keep the defense's attention everywhere. And then that just lets him, with his natural skill, to be a game breaker and a guy who can take over a ball game. Do that, and the Dolphins now have that piece. But who else? They don't have much else around him to command that attention from a defense, and that shows you the gap between them and Kansas City, and even Buffalo. Because Gabriel Davis blowing up, that's because the defense is worried about Stephon Diggs on one side. They're worried about Cole Beasley in the slot. They're worried about Dawson Knox, who's become a pretty reliable, you know, tight end, you know, touchdown scorer down in the red zone. It's having the depth, I think, even more than just having the skill guys. That's necessary too, but it's also having that depth. And that's something that, if you look at the Dolphins roster, I mean, they've already gained a couple pieces here and there, but they just don't have those layers of depth yet that these elite teams have and are showing why they're so explosive. And Green Bay said it about Davante Adams. And even they could probably use a couple more threats as well in the passing game. I mean, now they have their own set of problems because Aaron Rodgers is probably going to leave, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really, more than ever now in the NFL, it seems like there's just like an arms race for high-end talent. I mean, we saw it with the Rams and getting Jalen Ramsey, getting Matthew Stafford, getting Odell Beckham Jr., getting Von Miller. It just seems like there's an arms race where, like you said, you have to accumulate that talent and get that depth there. And again, with the Dolphins, like you said, they have Jalen Waddle, but outside of that, you really don't have much to account for. You know, if I was already of the mindset and the belief that the Dolphins need to expand, like, 75% of their resources this offseason on offense. But just watching that Kansas City Buffalo game, it's like, all right, I wouldn't be mad if every single transaction they make is to acquire an offensive lineman, a wide receiver, and a running back. I would not be mad at that at all.
Yeah.
But that leads – yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just because the quarterback part too. I mean, that's why it's such a big dilemma with the whole Tua question. Is he going to pan out? Is he going to be that guy that they hope for? Because you were talking about elite quarterbacks, almost all the teams left, except maybe the 49ers right now, have that guy. And this is a franchise. I mean, I can, you know, taking it back from watching them for years and covering them at times. I mean, since Marino, there's a whole generation that has come and does not know what it looks like for the Dolphins to have that level of a quarterback. And it goes all the way back to 2000. And until they establish that, they're not going to be able to contend truly on a Super Bowl level with the teams we saw this past weekend or teams of that caliber.
Yeah, that's a perfect transition into my last point, which was like, in outside of some really extraordinary situations, kind of like we see with San Francisco and Jimmy Garoppolo, you need elite quarterback play. I mean, we saw that plain and simple in the majority of the games. I mean, if you start with Cincinnati and Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill threw three interceptions. I mean, that was more or less the difference. I mean, he essentially threw the game-losing interception in that game. Joe Burrow, despite taking the 9 sacks, was able to make the throws when it mattered to get them in field goal range. You know, again, the San Francisco 49ers are kind of a unique situation because they really rely so much on that running game and their defense. But I'll even give Jimmy Garoppolo credit for all the jokes I tend to make sometimes. I mean, he made some key throws late in that game to set up the game-winning field goal. Yeah. Tampa Bay, Los Angeles. I mean, Matthew Stafford, I mean, he played a great game given the circumstances. I mean, if they had happened to blow that lead and fumble that game away, it would not have been his fault because he played a tremendous game. Tom Brady in the second half of that game when they needed to come back, he played exceptional. And you know what more? I mean, what more needs to be said about the final game that we saw between the Bills and the Chiefs? Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. I mean, people are talking about another Brady Manning type rivalry. I mean, that's the standard right now in the AFC and maybe in the NFL. That's the standard. And that brings me, I mean, I just thought so much over the weekend, like watching those, some of the plays that they made, the throws that they made, the execution. You know, I think there's fair questions, and you know, I've supported Tua a lot on this podcast and saying that I think that the Dolphins should give him another year. They need to build more around him to kind of see what his ceiling can be and his peak can be. But there are fair questions to ask, like at Tua's very, very tip of the peak, at his, you know, in the peak of his prime, will he be able to go head to head with those quarterbacks? And I know it's not him against Patrick Mahomes, it's him against the opposing defense, but it more or less was those two quarterbacks going back and forth. I mean, one quarterback would score a TD, the other one would come back and score a TD. I mean, they were more or less going head to head. And I think there are fair questions to ask, like, they're not going to have a perfect roster. I mean, no roster is perfect, but when this team is more, you know, complementary and they kind of fill the roster out and Tua gets into his prime, will he be able to emulate and kind of play to that standard?
All right. And it's a fair question on both ends, because if you look at Josh Allen, he wasn't Josh Allen immediately. It took him a little bit of time to get to that point. Even Patrick Mahomes, his rookie year was not Patrick Mahomes. So it is a fair question in terms of, do they want to be sure? Do they want to give him that one more year, add more pieces, and you know, one or even or more? Let's see how it goes this coming season. But yeah, I mean, if you're not, I mean, like you said about teams and what they have around them, that got them to, I think, let's say if you're watching that game, that gets them to the game itself, that gets them to the point where it's a duel in the fourth quarter. But that snippet of time of those 2 minutes, I mean, that was something. I mean, it was to a point where it was almost like we're not seeing that. We're obviously not going to see that very often, if ever again, to the that special of a magnitude. But that's where the talent takes over. And like you were saying about the two quarterbacks kind of dueling, I think that's where it is. And then also credit to those receivers, to, you know, Gabriel Davis continuing to get open. I mean, the Tampa game, Mike Evans made a heck of a play to get loose. I mean, he's getting covered by Jalen Ramsey. They're one-on-one, you know, right before the game even was tied, just to set up the play that later came, that came later. So again, it just goes back to those weapons that you have to have on the boundary there that are going to be able to win. Because if the Dolphins want to get to that point at some, you know, someday, they're going to have a receiver that could beat a Jalen Ramsey one-on-one, that could make a play like that in a clutch moment. And, you know, up to right now, they're still in that building process trying to find it.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Again, we all know that Tua is not at that level yet, but we can fairly say that, you know, the entire roster isn't there yet. I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the offensive line, skill position. The defense can maybe use a few more pieces in some certain spots. But again, this is going to be a really big offseason for the Dolphins. By all reports and accounts, it seems like the Dolphins are moving forward with Tua as the starting quarterback for 2022. So it's going to be a really big season for him as well. But we're still months and months away from that. We still got a lot of key points to touch on this offseason. But before we head to break, I want to touch on another part of this past weekend that was up for a lot of debate, which was the OT overtime rules. Obviously, the Chiefs Chiefs and Bills game went to overtime. The Chiefs won the toss, received, and they went down and scored a touchdown in their opening possession, thus winning the game. I know a lot of people were frustrated with that and saying that after a game like that, I mean, you have to let Josh Allen and the Bills touch the ball at least once. I think for me, I agree that both teams should have the right to touch the ball at least once. I'm not going to be like lighting the pitchforks if the NFL never changes the rule. I just don't really care that much. I don't feel that strongly about it. There was an interesting stat from NFL research that there have been 11 playoff overtime games since the new rules were instituted. And teams who win the coin toss are 10-1 in those overtime games, with seven of those 10 teams scoring a touchdown on the opening drive. Obviously, if you score a touchdown or you get a safety, you know, you win. If you score a field goal, the other team gets the chance to get the ball. And if they kick a field goal, it's next score wins. If they score a touchdown, they win. I think that both teams should get the chance to touch the ball, but I'm not opposed to keeping the rule the way it is. I think there's fair questions about like how long the game will go. I mean, I know someone said, hey, like if you go to like a second overtime possession, I mean, at what point does it kind of like negatively hurt the team that advances the next week? I mean, they got to prepare for another game next week. And I also have less sympathy for the Bills, like kind of given the circumstances of how that game went to overtime. I mean, you have 13 seconds left. The ball is at the 25-yard line. Like, you just – I know it's Mahomes, it's Tyreek Hill, it's Travis Kelce, but again, 13 seconds left, the ball at the minus 25-yard line. I mean, is it too much to ask to get a stop at that point in the game? What do you think about that?
I mean, growing up, I was always the first score wins, and there's so much randomness to that too. But I think if you look at law of averages too, I mean, by the time you get to that overtime period, there's a lot of fatigue on both sides. So odds are, yes, it's always going to favor the offense potentially scoring in that situation. I mean, I like the fact of both teams. I'm with you on the fact that I think both teams should have a chance in it and to do it. I think they fixed it halfway by making the field goal, not the finisher last season. I wish they would have done it all the way.
Yeah.
But if there is a legit concern of games going too long. So I think at the very least, why don't they have both sides touch it, have a possession in the playoffs only, maybe not in the regular season, but have it only happen in the playoffs, because the season's on the line, there's too much at stake. And we've seen it where it's a shame, where like this weekend, you saw they go right down the field, Buffalo never even touches the ball. The same thing happened to the Chiefs 3 years ago.
Exactly.
Brady marched right down the field with New England, and Mahomes is sitting on the bench, never had a chance. So you can make the arguments happen on both sides there. And at least in the postseason, where you do have the means to go more than one overtime if you need to, I think that's where, and you're settling something so important at that point. I think I would like to see it in the postseason at the very least. I get getting the games in during the regular season where we have potential ties, and they're happening anyway, even with these new rules, as we know. So.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that after the game, Andy Reid, who was on the winning side, even kind of acknowledged, hey, I mean, I'm glad we won, but, I think both teams should get to touch the ball first. Obviously, he had the experience, like you said, of kind of being on the wrong end of things a couple of years back. Josh Allen, you know, said, hey, I think we should touch the ball, but again, he said, if I was on the winning side, I probably wouldn't care as much, so I respect that honesty. I mean, how would you feel about two things? It's a 10-minute overtime possession. How would you feel if, you know, it wasn't next score wins, but you just play out the entirety of that overtime possession as if it's like an extra fifth quarter? How would you feel about that?
I mean, I wouldn't have an issue with it, but I think that's where I think the people that are more concerned about length of game would have an issue with it, because they're trying to like, and then, you know, obviously other factors come in, other external factors like TV and going games going too long and all that sort of thing too. So that's where I could see obstacles coming in that would prevent that scenario of doing it. I mean, it would settle at the very least, having the chance for both teams to get it, because no one's going to possess for all 10 or 15, or depending on how long, if you keep it at 10 minutes and then you do it that way and not extend it the way it used to be, where it was a full 15-minute period, you know, way back when. I mean, that'd be too long. But if you did keep it in that short time frame, maybe. But I don't have a problem with it, but I don't see it happening, only because there's going to be a lot of that other stuff where they're going to be worried about length of games and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it, just because like the rarity and the importance and the magnitude of the situation. I mean, we don't see a whole bunch of overtime games like in general, you know, from on a week to week basis, and in especially in the postseason. So like you said, I mean, those are really important games. Why not kind of bend the rules from the regular season to the postseason? The last suggestion that I wanted to bring up was something that was proposed last offseason by the Ravens. Obviously, I was on the Ravens beat last year, so I kind of read up a little bit more on this. Was this kind of spot and choose concept that John Harbaugh proposed? And it's essentially, instead of you replace the coin toss with the option to spot the ball and have the other team choose whether to start on offense or defense, or vice versa. You choose whether to start on offense or defense, and then the other team would spot the ball. So I guess the perfect, for an example, let's say the Bills are the opposing, they're the road team in the situation. They would say, I want to start the ball on the minus 40 yard line. And the Bills say, okay, we want to start on offense. And kind of vice versa. Let's say the Bills say they want to start on offense, then the Chiefs could spot them and have them start anywhere they wanted to. How would you feel about that? I think that the main thing in that concept suggestion is that you kind of take out the coin toss having such a pivotal role on the outcome of the game, and you replace it with more strategy.
Yeah, and it adds a lot of craziness too, because then you'd want to see like how far back do you want to move them. I guess the parameters would be key, because how far can you push a team back on the field, or is it certain guidelines, like only up to here? Like how do you set the rules for that part of it?
I mean, from crazy. Yeah, I mean, from what I read, I mean, it could be anywhere. Like, you could say, you could choose like the positive one. Like, you could place the ball on the goal line, and the other team could say, oh, well, I want to start on offense. Obviously, you would do that, because I mean, who wouldn't? Yeah. And under this rule suggestion, it would, the current scoring rules would still take place. So it'd still be next, it'd be set in death. So it'd be next score wins, actually. So I mean, there is a lot more strategy to it. I don't think that anybody would like place the ball at the goal line, because you could essentially be giving the game away. I think you'd probably be working more in like the 30 to 30 range. But I know some people that also brought up, like, what about the college overtime rules? And, you know, just place the ball at the 20, 25 yard line and have them go back and forth. And, you know, after the first two scores, you just have to keep on going for it on fourth down. I mean, I'd be surprised if the NFL does adjust the rules, because I do think that, like you said, they do care about the games kind of dragging on too long. But that 10, yeah, that 10 out of 11.
You also want to have the integrity. You want to have a little bit of the integrity of the game too. You don't want to make it too much of a circus or too, you know what I mean? Like not too crazy, where it's, you know, almost like run one play and see what happens after 10 minutes, and, you know, to prevent the tie, that sort of thing. So,
but
would be interesting. That would be an interesting concept, going to the spot the ball thing, just to see how they would set that up.
Yeah. I definitely wish they kind of ran a trial period on that during the regular season. Yeah. But again, maybe that'll come
they
up.
They can do preseason trials.
Well, the thing is, they don't do overtime for the preseason games anymore. So you can't do that anymore. I don't think they do. I think they got rid of that. So it'd be tough. Obviously, I'm sure that once.
Well, I just meant like in a setting, if you.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just you know, if you tried, like if you were going to experiment, though. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure during the off season, once they kind of, I know every off season they come together to kind of discuss rule changes. I know some team will probably propose some type of overtime change after this. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the Bills, but yeah, that would be interesting to see during the off season. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to get into the Dolphins' search for a new head coach. They finished their initial round of interviews last week. I'm sure in the next week or so, things will start to heat up as the other eight vacancies, not seven, but eight vacancies after Saints head coach Sean Payton said he was stepping away. I'm sure some of those vacancies will start to get filled as well, but we're going to talk about all that. So stay locked with us. What's going on, everybody? Still here with Andre Fernandez. In the second half of the pod, we're definitely going to get into the Dolphins search for a new head coach. So this past week, the Dolphins interviewed seven candidates that we know of in the pursuit of a new head coach after firing Brian Flores. You know, they kind of cast a wide net in their search for a new head coach. tapping into some coaches who have, you know, had experiences as head coaches in the NFL, some up and comers, some assistants, offense side of the ball, the defense side of the ball, even a lot of coaches who have ties to the Dolphins as former assistants. But to this point, it's been kind of silent. You know, a lot of NFL teams with vacancies have been announcing the completion of interviews, you know, right after they're done. The Dolphins have kind of taken a different approach. They haven't spoken publicly since Stephen Ross's, I guess, season-ending news conference after the firing of Brian Flores. So at this point, we don't really know who the top candidates are. But in the next week or so, you know, I'm assuming the Dolphins will start to, you know, request second interviews, and at that point, we can kind of start to whittle the list and see who the finalists, who the top candidates are. I guess for me, again, not much has been reported. I know that R. Barry Jackson said that Brian Daboll, the Bills offensive coordinator, has strong support in the organization. He said that Cardinals defensive coordinator Vance Joseph is highly regarded by general manager Chris Greer. So you could assume that those two are probably a little closer up on the list than some of the other candidates. For me, I guess when I look at the top candidates, I definitely have to put Daboll and Joseph in that list. And I guess rounding out the top four for me would be Dan Quinn, the Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator, and Mike McDaniel, the San Francisco 49ers offensive coordinator, who is seemingly a fan favorite and the top candidate for Dolphins Twitter. If you're on Twitter, checking that out. You know, we don't know which direction the Dolphins will go in, Andre, but I guess who do you think should be the top candidate at this point?
I mean, I think going back to seeing what the blueprint is and seeing what the deficiency of this team has been for a while now, I think offense has definitely been something that's been lacking, especially to that elite level, like we were talking about in the first segment. And that's where my hunch is they're going to go in the direction of getting an offensive minded coach, especially. And that's why all the arrows seem to align towards Brian Daboll to a degree, because of his history with Tua and that whole dilemma of how much is he going to flourish and how much is Tua going to become? Is he going to become that quarterback that they're hoping he is? And can Brian Daboll be that coach that can help him get there? Right now, I know if they are going to get him, they better make moves, because I know right now, as I'm looking at it, Adam Schefter's tweeting that the Giants finished the second interview with Brian Daboll.
Oh, wow. This is breaking.
He's a hot commodity right now. So, I mean, we'll see. But, I mean, I like Vance Joseph too. I just don't know if they're going to go more with a defensive minded coach again, you know, because we saw Brian Flores do a great job in that side of the ball with this team over the 3 years that he was here, the way that they were able to put all those pieces together. I mean, I like him. I think he's one of the best of all the candidates. I mean, they could go the route with McDaniel, but maybe the familiarity with Tua is what, you know, kind of moves it toward Daboll a little bit more. But I think honestly, I think an offensive mind is what they've got to be looking for at this point. And it's someone, you know, with, even if they don't have head coaching experience, but the fact that they've worked with younger quarterbacks and they've been able to develop some of them, I think is something that's, you know, really necessary, and it's attractive for this team right now.
Yeah. When I spoke to Barry 2 weeks ago, this was a day after the Dolphins fired Brian Flores. We really didn't have any concrete requested interviews yet. I said, you know, I think that Stephen Ross said that he doesn't have a certain coach in mind or anything like that. I think that given, similar to what you said, given how the Flores tenure ended, you definitely want somebody who has done the job before. So you don't necessarily want a first-time head coach, and you want somebody who can develop the offense specifically to a. Now, from the seven reported candidates, you know, while some of them are offensive minded, you know, you have Daboll, you have Mike McDaniel, and Kellen Moore, the Cowboys offensive coordinator, none of those three are, you know, all of those would be first time head coaches. So you don't really have the experience there in terms of having done the job before, but you do have the offensive background. I also said that I don't necessarily want the Dolphins to hire a head coach solely because he's going to quote unquote fix Tua. But at the same time, I couldn't necessarily blame them for doing that, because, you know, Tua is the single most important person in this franchise. I mean, we just have to put it plain and simple. If Tua plays well this next season, if he improves at a Burrow / Herbert like rate, and the Dolphins are in the playoffs, all is well. all is well in Miami. Nobody's questioning a decision to fire Flores, and everyone's keeping their jobs. If Tua does not play well, you could be in line for another shakeup in 2023. That's just facts. Again, it's interesting that the Dolphins haven't really announced any of their interviews. I didn't know. I mean, you broke it right on the pod right here that they will.
Yeah, and I stand corrected. It was Schefter retweeting the Giants themselves. It was the Giants themselves that were tweeting out that they just completed the second interview with Dable. So
yeah, so I mean, Dable's obviously been linked to that Giants job with Joe Shane getting the GM job. He spent several years in Buffalo, kind of with Dable, obviously overlapping. He's a former Dolphins exec. So it makes sense there. I mean, it's kind of a pairing that you think on paper makes sense. And, you know, it's interesting to see. I see it as a kind of like a musical chair situation. You know, like some of these teams are going to start to get their guy and they're going to start to fill their vacancies. And after a while, you know, if you're a team that hasn't made a hire, you're kind of looking around, the candidate pool is shrinking and you're saying, all right, well, we got to get somebody. You know, you can't go back and say, oops, we're going to take Flores back. You know, that's gone and that's done. So I do wonder, you know, you have Dable who could potentially go to the Giants job. You have Dan Quinn, who I think would be a really, really strong candidate and would be a really solid hire if he comes to Miami. You have him being linked to the Broncos job, the Bears job. Vance Joseph, I haven't really seen or heard of him being linked to any other jobs or interviewing for any other jobs. I know a large portion of the Dolphins fan base, it's not a hire that, you know, they would really, you know, jump out of their seats for. But I'm not sure if there are a lot of, you know, hires or a lot of candidates in this kind of cycle where you would kind of really like kind of perk your ears up and say, oh, okay, you know, maybe a Jim Harbaugh if they go that route or whatever. But that doesn't seem to be in the cards right now. McDaniel is a really interesting option for me because I think that he'd be a breath of fresh air. You know, he checks the box from being an offensive guy. You know, I'm sure a lot of Dolphins fans on Twitter have seen the videos of him like explaining concepts and you know, just talking about the game. I think that he'd not only be a breath of fresh air on the field as kind of an innovative mind, but off of it. And you know, one thing about, you know, in my one season covering the team, you know, obviously I don't have the kind of the experience of other beat writers, but in my one season in Miami, it just felt like Flores' personality never really lent itself to kind of endearing to the fan base. I never like felt like a really deep connection with Flores and the fan base. And I don't know, just getting a young guy like McDaniel, he's 38, he seems to be energetic, fresh, you know, I think that'd be a real, like, again, a breath of fresh air for not only the on-field product, but kind of the fans who have kind of gone tired of maybe Flores' personality and the way he went about things.
Well, Flores, I think ever since he, you know, got on the field with the defenders players a couple of years ago, I think that was the moment that kind of endeared him to a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're right. After that, though, personality wise, I think there's a lot of Belichick in him and that serious kind of, you know, wasn't so much. But you know, I'm with you totally in the part that you can't just hire this next coach because he's the Tua whisperer and he's going to make him better and all of that. You have to look long-term because if not, why are you hiring someone, you know, with the hopes of him, of him staying for a while? And you're right. That's where McDaniel, if they're sure, I wouldn't rush this just be, you know, if the 49ers are still playing and for all we know, they could make it to the Super Bowl. You have to know, you have to find the right guy. And if Mike McDaniel is that right guy, you know, that I think it's something, it's a balance where you want him obviously to help Tua get better, but you want this to be hopefully a longer term solution for your team and not keep having this shuffle every couple of years like they've been having, and have some stability too. I mean, that's the other thing that's going to get you where you want to go as a franchise, is to have that coaching stability and have a guy that can really flourish this team. Because I mean, if Tua doesn't work out, I mean, that it's not going to, if Tua doesn't work out, he's not going to be here 2-3 years from now. The decision's going to be made. Something's going to happen, but you need to have some stability in this and not this over and over the same recycle. And I love what McDaniel's done in San Francisco. I think the innovations you were talking about, I mean, I mentioned Debo Samuel earlier. That's one example of how to use a player just in all facets and all, you know, just kind of you know, maximize his talents and use him out of the backfield. I mean, what they've done, not just with him, but, you know, the different backs out of the backfield this year. I mean, they find Elijah Mitchell. Everybody's thinking Trey Sermon's their guy in the backfield. Elijah Mitchell's their guy, the sixth rounder. Turns out to be he may be their starter for a while now over there. And that's another thing, too. The running game has been a problem here for a while. They haven't had a stable, you know, feature back that's really been consistently the guy here. We saw so many of them. You detailed it the other day in the running back breakdown, how many different options they had to go to this year. So can they find that as well in their offense with a coach like McDaniel if he comes to Miami?
Yeah, I kind of joked on Twitter that I couldn't wait for Mike McDaniel to turn Miles Gaskin into a 1,500-yard runner. I know some Dolphins fans didn't take too kindly to that. They were like, don't get our hopes up. Don't get our hopes up. So yeah. just kind of joking there. But again, I think it really would be a breath of fresh air. When you kind of look at, I won't say the fallback options, but kind of the names that haven't been linked as much, although they did interview. You have Leslie Frazier, the Bills defensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, as I said, the Cowboys offensive coordinator, and Thomas Brown, who's kind of a lesser known name, but he's the running backs coach and assistant head coach with Sean McVay with the Rams. You know, if for some reason they kind of swing and miss, I do tend to think that out of that top four group that we mentioned, Dable, Joseph, Quinn, McDaniel, I do think that one of those guys will be the next head coach of the Dolphins. But if for some reason they don't get those four guys, I mean, do any of those next three names kind of intrigue you? I think Frazier would be a solid option as somebody who's been there and done it. I mean, he's had success going to the playoffs in one of those three seasons in Minnesota. Any of those guys stick out to you?
Yeah, I think Frazier, I agree with you on that part. But again, it's kind of that the whole thing like before. Do they go with a more defensive mind and not so much a guy that can be, you know, that's more for the offense, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, Kellen Moore, he's had a lot of praise this year, but he hasn't done it for very long in the league. So he also has had Dak Prescott and a lot of weapons to work with in Dallas too, which would not be the case, at least not immediately here in Miami. So I mean, to me, the wild card is still, do we take Stephen Ross's word that he won't go after Jim Harbaugh and won't sleep talk him into coming over here? And I mean, that's the big name. I'm not saying that necessarily he's the right guy or not, but that's the big name. That's the biggest name that would dwarf everybody else probably or a lot of them on this list.
I think for sure, dwarf everyone.
And you've got the experience. He's a guy who, you know, had led, you know, the 49ers to the Super Bowl, you know, has done it at this level before. Again, that to me is like the one option. If all of a sudden the well dries up here and since some of these guys start going places and they find themselves in a spot where, you know, do they try to swing big and get that home run and land Harbaugh? I mean, they'd have to get them soon as well, because obviously that you're getting into your own college offseason at Michigan over there, and you know, signing day's coming up. As soon as that happens, you know, everything that goes on with a college coach. So we'll see. I mean, that to me, that's the one name there. I mean, another candidate I'm surprised they didn't even try, or at least not, doesn't sound like they have, is Eric Bieniemy. And that just puzzles me all the way around that he doesn't get more attention for what he's done in Kansas City over the years. I feel like he's had some interviews right now in this cycle a little bit, but I feel like why doesn't he get as much as some of these other guys?
Yeah, I mean, the Bieniemy thing is interesting. I know the Dolphins did interview him in their last cycle, I guess, when they were looking for a coach in 2019 and then ended up hiring Brian Flores. But yeah, it's been relatively quiet for him, I guess, kind of when you compare it to previous seasons. Obviously, I think a lot of people naturally just bring up the Andy Reid argument and say, hey, well, Andy Reid's the real architect behind it. He's not calling plays, which has been kind of disputed at points. Yeah. But then you look at like guys like Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson, who I actually thought that they should reach out to and mm-hmm. look into. I'm surprised we haven't heard that. But you look at other former, you know, kind of offensive coordinators under Andy Reid who haven't called plays, but they've got the opportunity to run an NFL team. I agree with you. I don't see why, you know, I don't know why the Dolphins didn't reach out to him. I don't know why other teams haven't. But going back to the Harbaugh point, I mean, that is the one dark horse candidate that I think that if there was any hire in this cycle that would make Dolphins fans and make me kind of step up and kind of get out of my seat and say, oh, okay, it'd be the Harbaugh hire. And again, I'm not sure if it would work. We do know that he has past success in the NFL. So you have that there. But again, you know, it's kind of, I think Stephen Ross was very cautious and measured, and I think he was tactical with it, with his comments in that kind of season ending news conference. He said, I'm not going to be the one to take Jim Harbaugh from Michigan. Obviously, Ross is a big Michigan alum and booster and donor and whatnot. So he said, I'm not going to be the one to take him from there. But it's different if Harbaugh wants to go there, you know. You know, there have been various reports about his interest in getting back to the NFL and whatnot. I think that even I saw a report that, you know, there was a recruit that said, hey, I would entertain it. He said that Harbaugh told him when they were kind of speaking in the visit that he said that he would entertain NFL teams that want him back in the league. So, again, it's different. I haven't really heard too much on I know there were talks about a contract extension with Harbaugh. I'm not sure where that is. I haven't heard too much. But again, if something kind of breaks down in contract talks and Harbaugh says, all right, I'm out of here. I want to go back to the NFL. It's a little different. It's a little easier for Stephen Ross to sleep well at night. But obviously, we know his past of courting Jim Harbaugh to the job initially in the 11th hour a couple years back when before he went to the 49ers. You know, that I don't want to put a percentage on it, but it is I would say it's definitely a dark horse candidate. I mean, the team has been very, very quiet right now. We haven't heard a lot of leaks. They're not announcing stuff. Again, if their top two or three guys, they don't get them. And, you know, maybe something with Harbaugh's situation, he comes out and says he wants to come to the NFL. It's a possibility. And again, I don't know if it would work, but it'd definitely be interesting.
Yeah. And like Peterson's another one that you mentioned that he, right now he's coming back. I think he's made it pretty clear he wants to come back this year after that year off he's had.
You know, yeah,
kind of funny coming back after all those years. You know, him being the winning quarterback back in '93 when Shula won his record setting game. It'd be kind of funny for him to come back as the head coach, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's another Dolphins tie right there. Again, you know, you look at Dable, Joseph, Quinn, all those guys have Dolphins ties. Brian Flores, or I'll say Stephen Ross, spoke a lot about kind of the lack of communication and collaboration with Brian Flores. I think they definitely do want somebody that they're comfortable with, which is why I think guys like Dable and Joseph kind of have the upper hand. But again, it's been quiet on their front. I'm sure in the next couple of days or so, as you know, teams will start to fill their GM openings. They're starting to interview a second time with some of their top candidates. Again, it feels like musical chairs to me. You know, whether the Dolphins get their guy or they kind of look around and see the seats start to fill up, they're gonna have to get somebody eventually. And I think definitely in the next week or so, we're gonna see some moves, if not an announcement of a hire.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if there wasn't, especially now with the field trimmed down to the final four. There's got to be a little bit going on. So
you're right. I mean, the only two candidates left that we know of for the Dolphins that are left coaching in the postseason are Thomas Brown and Mike McDaniel. Obviously, I think McDaniel was probably a little higher up on that list for the Dolphins than Brown.
Yeah.
But again, they can talk to these guys. They can make offers. They can agree to hires. So again, the process is definitely starting to speed up a little bit. And I know that a lot of Dolphins fans who are kind of antsy to see who they were going to replace Brian Flores with, I think we'll definitely see. We'll find out soon.
Yep, I think so too. I mean, these there's a lot of teams even in more rebuilding mode than the Dolphins, and I think you're going to see, especially like right now, teams are already doing second interviews with some of these guys. So, but again, to me, it's crucial for them to make the right choice, and if that means maybe waiting for a McDaniel, hey, so be it.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna find out soon, and I'm sure regardless of who they hire, I know Dolphins fans will have a lot of strong emotions as they always do. As they always do. Yeah. But that brings us to the end of another edition of the Dolphins in Depth podcast. I want to thank Andre so much for joining me this week. Stay with us because it's gonna be a really busy offseason, from the head coach hiring to the offseason, whether it's the combine, free agency, the draft. We're going to have you covered from all angles at the Miami Herald. Next week, I'll actually be in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. So I'm really excited to head to Alabama for the first time. Check that out. And again, we're going to have a good Dolphins in Depth podcast from Mobile to kind of break down some of the top players, some targets, potential targets for the Dolphins. So again, enjoy this weekend slate of games. And we'll be back next week to talk Dolphins football. But until then, you guys take care. Bye.